what I like about our religious education. You know, it's not too serious. My name is Natalie. I've been so moved by what other members have said about why they give to our church that I've been listening to over the weeks. The sense of community, of family even, that many have talked about means a lot to me also. The ministers and the members of this church have been with me in joy and sorrow over 35 or so years now. In this very room, I've experienced heights and depths of feeling that can shake me when I think of them. Ah, I'm going to cry. In worship or weddings, including my own right here, or memorials, including those of dear friends and my son. The support we were given over the years of my son's struggles with addiction and finally his death, but also singing and listening to music, watching our children learn and grow in a place of love and acceptance, hearing words that make me think or make me feel peaceful, being given opportunities to support and serve others, and on and on. By upbringing, maybe genetics, who knows, I'm churchy. Whatever my beliefs, I will be going to church somewhere. But the thing about this church is that we aren't here because God will punish us because we're not. We're not here because it's a sin if we stay home. We're not here so that others will think well of us. It's completely voluntary, a chosen faith, as the book says. This is kind of remarkable to me when I think about it. Nothing happens to us if we stay home, and yet we're here. Because we want to be, because we find meaning and purpose here, because we want to figure out how to live a good life, how to be an ethical person, without being handed a creed. We figure it out for ourselves. And here we find guides and companions and dear friends along the way. The other remarkable thing is that we voluntarily support this church with our service and with our money. It's here because we do that, and only because we do that. There's nothing coming from anywhere else. Excuse me, I brought my own glass of water. So this year, we raised our pledge. What actually happened was we agreed to keep it the same, and then I heard Scott's talk, and I whispered to Doug, could we raise it, and he said, okay. I think we pledged maybe 7% of our income, maybe a little less, I'm not quite sure. And that's because I was inspired by what Scott said on his Sunday. And that's because religious education is so important. And that's because sometimes Katie and Sarah and Holly sing. And that's because people brought us food when we needed it. When we sing the song, Katie reminded me this song is not in our hymnal, but I know we've sung it here. Somos el barco, somos el mar. We're saying that we are the boat floating on the sea, and we're also the sea holding up the boat. And that's how church works, and that's why I give.
As the overarching vessel for our worship this month, Spirit of Life, Fuente de Amor, which it says at the top of your bulletin that this is the theme for this month, is a grand and divine-like address for what we've been calling the messiness of religion in general and the complexity and contradictions of our unique faith tradition in particular. In the last couple weeks, we've examined how peacemaking is something we value while acknowledging our differences in how it is we get there. We reviewed our relationship with food and its sources, how our food choices are an ethical part of our faith. Again, as individuals, we arrive at different conclusions. Today, as part of the Spirit of Life, the Fuente de Amor, we continue a spiritual examination, the way we keep religious traditions and practices. In our aim for religious freedom, we must carefully examine our choices in practice and in celebration, so that we are not guilty of the same oppression we aim to abolish. So as we approach the Jewish holiday of Passover, which will begin tomorrow, actually, Monday, March 25th, it is befitting to review how it is we honor Jewish Unitarian Universalists and to pay attention to that part of our heritage as UUs. As the Passover song asks, is it sufficient? There is a reading that's included in the Building Your Own Theology curriculum that helps me make sense of these religious struggles. Maybe some of you who've just recently taken the class will recall these words that come from early 20th century Unitarian minister John Haynes Holmes. And he says, "When I say God, it is poetry, not theology. Nothing that any theologian has written about God has helped me much, but everything the poets have written about flowers and birds and skies and seas and saviors of the race and God, whoever God may be, has at one time or another reached my soul. The theologians gather dusk on the shelves of my library, but the poets are stained with my fingers and blotted by my tears." I think it's easier to connect with the poet's descriptions of the world of beauty and complexity, even when we don't understand what it is they're saying, than it is to attempt to make sense of the history of doctrines. How are we sufficiently informed by those who try to explain religion that never really quite fits together like a puzzle anyway? So the Hebrew word that's called dayenu, meaning it would have been sufficient, helps us to see that we continue over time to struggle with honoring traditions, the history of a people, and our own family trees. We each have our own complicated stories and memories. We each have our own levels of functioning. Notice how I didn't say dis before the word functioning. Our well-worn customs and the meanings of those customs. Some of us come from outside of any kind of Jewish connection and would simply like to learn about and honor with respect a Jewish religious tradition. Years ago, I remember a casual conversation with the rabbi of the large Reform synagogue in central Denver, with whom our UU congregation had an ongoing positive relationship. The rabbi shared his dismay that so many people of religious descent were in attendance and were members of our church. For him, it was a loss of those folks' identification of their Judaism and in keeping their own traditions. As we talked through our Passover plans during our staff meeting here, Roy and Darcy and Kelly and I, we began to share with each other. Darcy has come back in because she shared her own story, one that you've heard just a bit about with the children, her own story of growing up UU and her congregation being in a Jewish neighborhood. So here's Darcy's story.
Clever how she came in like that.
I beamed in. Good morning. Changing gears here, okay. Stop eating your bagels, don't put it in your eye. Okay, there we go. So my older brother Matt and I, we share this memory of a day in sixth grade, and he's 4 years older, so it was a different day, but it both really stuck out in our minds. And it was the day that the sixth grade teacher pulled down the world religions map. And my mind was absolutely blown away. Apparently, most of the world was not Catholic. You see, I grew up in Syracuse, New York, and my friends had names like Chica, Desirio, D'Amato, Balduzzi, Tisga, O'Brien, Seneiko, all Polish, Italian, and Irish Catholic names. Of course, what do last names mean to 10-year-olds? So, it took us, how long did it take me to get to church?
25
minutes. Excellent. And on that long drive, we drove past the Temple Society of Concord in downtown Syracuse, and we passed a temple for a sign for a temple, Adath Yeshurun. And on the way to get bagels after church, we drove past Shirai Torah Orthodox Congregation. And I did not think anything about that drive and those synagogues until I was in seminary. I did not think about my youth group leader, Mr. Cohen, and his son, Eli. And I did not think anything about the Bergmans, the Abrams, the Finkelsteins, or the Levines in my church. And I did not think anything about the fact that my father's brother, my Uncle Larry, married a Jewish woman, and so my cousins were Jewish. It didn't really mean anything to me to go to their bar and bat mitzvahs. I like to joke that I am a quintessential Unitarian Universalist because half my extended family is Jewish and the other half is gay. It's true. But, you know, I never really thought much about my family identity or even my church's my church identity, again, until I went to seminary. Now, don't get me wrong, I thought plenty about my identity, who I was. But the family and the broader church community, not so much. And when I started seminary, like many Unitarian Universalists, I would have told you that I was not Christian. I was a Unitarian Universalist. I mean, I don't believe that Jesus Christ, my Lord, is the Savior, so I'm not Christian. And growing up in Syracuse, I knew I definitely was not Catholic. And in fact, most Christians would tell you that Unitarian Universalists are not Christian. But here's the thing. I hang around with a lot of Jews. And apparently I always have, I just didn't know it. I can walk into a Reform or a Renewal synagogue, and I can slip right into their liturgy and their theology a lot easier than I ever can walk into most churches. And, you know, when I started seminary and I was hanging around with my Jewish friends, they would kind of chuckle when I told them I was not Christian. Because to them, oh, I was definitely Christian, definitely Protestant. Maybe not religiously so, but culturally, definitely. Currently, I'm reading a book by philosopher Charles Taylor called A Secular Age, and he says, our sense of who we are is crucially defined in part by the story of how we got here. Our past is sedimented into our present, and we are doomed to misidentify ourselves as long as we cannot do justice to where we come from. So who am I as a Unitarian Universalist? Who are we? I am both a Christian and not a Christian who has spent a lot of time with Jews. We are a people whose congregations are often in the Jewish part of town. As one of my closest friends puts it, you are Jew-ish. And so you can then imagine some of my pain and confusion when a Jewish friend of mine came to church one Sunday to hear me preach. And he walked in and saw some folks wearing Stars of David. And later he told me he had a really hard time being in that church. He saw those Stars of David and his initial kind of gut response was, what are you doing here? Why aren't you at shul? And I've heard from various friends kind of in those big level conversations that Jewish folks can have about losing people from the Jewish community, Unitarian Universalists are often mentioned as the church that most effectively lures Jewish people away. In fact, some consider Unitarian Universalists the most effective Christian evangelizers. Because we are not, since we're not all about glorifying Jesus, but clearly are Protestant in culture and implicit theology, we make it a lot easier for Jewish people to assimilate. Now, this analysis does not acknowledge that for about 50 years or so, many intermarried Jew and Christian couples were not welcomed in most synagogues, and UU congregations were the only places they could find a religious home. So it's messy, but it does not mean there's not some truth in that analysis. And so where does this leave me? Where does it leave us? I'm confused, muddled, in the middle. My favorite word, messy. So I am a Christian and not a Christian with strong inclinations toward liberal Judaism. And let me tell you, all of this is not easy to put into a religious education plan for 5 to 11-year-olds. You notice I left, right? I'm up here. Yeah, good luck, David and Linda. Right now, they're trying to make these connections between Jews and Passover and Christians and Easter with some interweaving of pagan springtime celebrations. Last weekend, I was at a conference of abortion providers where I led a workshop on how clinics might be able to do reach out to local liberal congregations. And after the workshop, a woman who runs a Midwest abortion fund came up to me, and she's a UU. And so she asked me this question that I think a lot of us dread. So, Darcy, what is your elevator speech for Unitarian Universalism? Oh. And I have a couple different ones. Kind of my first one is, well, you see, Christians don't consider us Christians, but if you're a Jew, Muslim, or Hindu, we sure seem Protestant. We talked about that one for a while, and then I told her this one, that Unitarian Universalism is a tradition that lives on the bridge between the religions of Abraham and Sarah, on the bridge between Catholicism, Protestantism, and Judaism in particular. Born from Calvinist Protestants, we Unitarian Universalists now live on that bridge. We live at the intersection of these traditions. She liked that one. That was one she thought she could say in an elevator. We are a messy, kind of blurry religious people living in and around and through this intersection of traditions. And so today, back there, guess what our children are doing after listening to a Passover and an Easter story? They...
Eating
bagels. Yes. I think they're done with the bagels at this point. So they are building bridges out of popsicle sticks. Because if there is anything I can definitely say about us Unitarian Universalists, we are a people living on a bridge. Thank you.
So now let's see if we can apply what Darcy said to our context here. In the years of Darcy's childhood, those same years that were my own young adulthood, there was, as she said, an almost kindred connection between the Jews and the Unitarians specifically, as both were considered outsiders in the larger fabric of religious community, that the U.S. community that so widely and largely considered itself Christian in some form, usually mainline Christian. Reform Judaism and liberal Unitarianism, both were traditions with large contingents of humanists. So we stuck together. and we traded pulpits back and forth. But now, our communities at large are often more pluralistic, more diverse in whether to even hold a value of practicing religion. So, a recently popular gathering in Christian churches, I don't know if you've seen this from the wayside pulpits as you drive down roads, have you heard of this thing called a Christian Seder? It is a well-intentioned attempt to honor the Jewishness of Jesus and the Jewish roots of the Christian communion meal. And this is happening in Christian churches. It's problematic. Although scholars agree that the Last Supper was some sort of Passover meal, it really is not clear that it was a Seder, since the introduction of a ritual Seder was not introduced into Jewish life until after the time of Jesus. It's also troublesome that this is being done because it is done as part of the Christian celebration of Holy Week. It's done on a Maundy Thursday. And considering the complicated history and relationships of the Christian and Jewish faiths, it makes this activity especially fraught with difficulty. One liberal professor of church history widely warns, "Don't do it, please," as she writes her article explaining the whole context. To add to the complexity, as Darcy noted, we UUs live on the border between the two traditions. We're connected to Protestantism through our historical lineage. This is, I always describe it as a tree. If the Protestant tradition is a tree, then we are the branch that's the most far out. I'm going to point to left that way because it's leftward leaning. It's that branch that's almost ready to fall off the edge of the tree. But that is where our historical lineage is. And yet, our linkage to Judaism becomes apparent at this time of year. Passover is the emancipation of the Israelites from slavery in ancient Egypt. It's a story of liberation for a particular people who have suffered oppression and slavery. Yet we see that it's a place to make links, to create allies, and certainly in the history of both our Unitarian and our Universalist traditions, the perceived and labeled heresies to which we are linked, that as Unitarians and as Universalists, we have been called heretics, both of those faiths, they connect us to this important story of freedom. Now, my rabbi friend from Denver may disagree, and Darcy's friend may disagree, however, suggesting that Seders belong in Jewish homes led by Jewish families. I don't know. I like to hope that we are allies, witnesses to religious oppression wherever it occurs. And if that is true, then as allies, we are responsible to do our best to navigate through the waters of complexity, doing our best to not appropriate the traditions of another culture. So I'm going to try to say it with less muddiness and more clarity. We are a primarily Gentile or not Jewish people. So our observation of a Jewish ritual, the Passover Seder, should emulate or acknowledge, as it is possible, the traditions of Judaism. Our Haggadah, the order of service that we currently use for this ritual, comes from a now-retired Unitarian Universalist minister who himself grew up in a Jewish home, someone who studies and collects Haggadah, which is the plural. He's got hundreds of Haggadahs in his home. He created this celebration that we use, and it has been in use now for over 30 years in many Unitarian Universalist congregations across the nation. And it aims to be respectful for people of Jewish ancestry, and it includes those themes of liberation that are more contemporary and aligned with the Jewish story. Now, there are also places where we hear added to this form, such as the Jewish feminist custom that began in the 1980s and also welcomes LGBT folk of adding an orange to the Seder plate of the fruitfulness of the world and the fruitfulness of our lives. We also have created a mainly vegetarian Seder in order to honor animals in our liberation story. So we ask, is it sufficient? We will have to continue to navigate that terrain. And as Darcy mentioned, we are a bridge faith, and we are an aware faith, paying attention to injustices that exist in religious and in the material, in the history and in the present. As we commit ourselves to the responsible search for truth and meaning, our imperative is to continue to struggle to ask not only the tough questions, but to attempt to answer them and to live out as best we can our answers. The Reverend Dr. Lynn Unger, the author of the poetry we read today, herself a part of the fabric of this congregation, as she was part of our ministerial staff for a while, she grew up Jewish Unitarian Universalist. Her parents were two of those mixed folks who found a faith that would accept them both, one agnostic and one Jewish. And her poetry reminds us that there is no safety, only the terrible blessing of the journey. Let us make the messy blessing of the journey of our own religious faith, taking our living tradition seriously enough so that we do this sacred work with respect and integrity. May we be able to say with a humble level of assuredness, Dayenu, it is sufficient. Amen, and blessed be.